Good morning, everyone, and welcome to one of our programs on Identify as Being. We seem to be in the fifth series, and I'm gathering all these together so that, and trying to organize them, so that if you wish to consult what we've already done, you'll be able to do that. Today I hope that we will have a little meditation first. It's on profound matters, I think, and maybe something of that sense, I don't know what to call it, which comes upon us now and then, we'll be able to be more stabilized in our understanding, or at least, let's just say, more stabilized in our consciousness. I'd like to welcome you. You know, there are a few of us, and when we do these early programs, the United States is pretty well asleep, but there are a few people that managed to be with us out on the West Coast, at least. So welcome then to Catherine and Cindy and Karen and Kasim, Leslie, Martine, Roz, Vera, and Tuya's here with me, I think, giving me a hand with what's needed. Welcome to you, and Tia just joined. Good morning, everyone. At least morning here, as after quite an intense February and January, maybe we see signs of spring. I would be very happy if that were the case. Okay. Now, basically, it's a meditation this morning. And it deals with what I'm calling the, let me get there, with the point and with overlapping points and with the factor in consciousness that we call or can call pervasion. You know, when something pervades, it's found everywhere. And the word for that is ubiquity. Everywhere, everywhereness. So we're dealing with a point within the heart that the old Vedantists have identified. And they call it the residence of the spirit. And that's how we're thinking about it also. Of course, this is not just about thinking. We can, you know, cogitate quite a bit, and we can have many thoughts. But the thought is not the thing. And the thought is a layer over reality. And we're interested in getting as close to reality as may be possible. Of course, and I'm speaking experientially, we already are real in our inmost essence. And in a way, there is never any departure from reality. There's no place else to go, and there's nothing else to be involved with except inescapable reality. But reality is so multiply veiled that we're always mistaking the veil for the real thing. We have to remember, you know, in a great act of service, from Rule 10 of Rays and Initiations, that the Christ rent the curtain of the temple from the top to the bottom. He just ripped it. Make sure you turn off your speaker or your microphone. You'll have your chance and we'll get into it. But from the top to the bottom, the veil of the temple was torn in two. And that veil, you know, is what separates the outer part of the temple from the Holy of Holies. We're in a way, it doesn't make any difference what kind of symbolism you're looking for or using. We're all looking for the same thing, the Holy of Holies. And we're looking to discriminate between our many perceptions, which we call, in the language of esotericism, the many and the one. We're looking for the difference between the many perceptions and reality, which is the one. But it's not like we have to kind of go out and find the one as if it were something else. See, that would be to fall in illusion. That would be a dualism. And what we're into now is non-dualism. Non-dualistic perception, which I call infusception. That's what we're really striving for here. Non-dualistic perception. And when we do that, it's one of the ways of getting closer and closer to what we in esotericism call the monad. Now, you know, the monad is that something that a lot of people talk about but have no notion of what they're really talking about. It's just filled with mystery. But the connecting seed of reality in the, let's call it just the center of the heart, is that which is what's going to open the door into awareness of the monad and into more than that, into awareness of being the monad. So every once in a while we have these programs now, and it gives us what I want to call relief from relativity. Everything we do in the world is in the relative world of illusion. We're just bound by what's called the great Maya, the Maha Maya. And every once in a while, we need to remind ourselves, and at more and more frequent intervals, really, that beneath the relativity or relativity, if you will, beneath that relativity that we constantly experience is something else which is non-dual, non-relational, and so intimately, I want to say the word related, but you know, it's not quite right. So intimately related to what we are, that it's beyond being related to what we are, it is what we are. And, you know, it comes and goes because the veil of the temple is not yet ripped apart, as the Christ, with his kind of identificatory perception, can do, and did, and he lives that way. He's the great, for us anyway, you know, we live in a very local part of the universe. He's the great master of identification. He's the no-boundary man, you might say. And of course, there are others, obviously. But he, the Christ, you know, if I were to, maybe I should have been putting this into a few different terms right up here, so I would just say that Christ is not confined by boundaries. Now, you know, you begin to think about the boundless, immutable principle. And this, then, is identificatory consciousness. Or we might call it monadic awareness. It's maybe as close as we can get. And it will only increase as we continue to return along our line of emanation, from whence we, as partialities, came forth. We are, you know, it's another way of looking at who we are. We are partials. We are partialities. And we have to return along our emanative line, and to imagine that the great gods have less awareness of the deep reality than we do, or equal, as some systems of thought seem to tell you, I think is an illusion. So, you know, basically, what we're dealing with here is not so much glamour. It is illusion. We are all victims of the great illusion. And I want to take that idea farther, as far as possible. The whole universe, finally, is the ultimate Mahamaya. And then what is reality? Well, many words, but it has to be experienced. And it will only grow more and more intense, the experience of reality. Right now, it would be overwhelming. And in our little emanative condition, we couldn't stand it. But as we grow into greater and greater beings, on our return to the greatest of all beings in our universe, that point of tension which reveals reality as ourselves, note, reveals reality as ourselves, will grow. I am the seeker and the sought. I rest. Well, we'll see about that when it comes time, but let's just say that regarding our solar system, half of its time is now expended. Regarding our planet, we might be able to say the same. But that's leaving millions and billions and even trillions of Earth years remaining of planetary, solar systemic, cosmic experience before us. So we'll only extend our ring pass knot so far. And in terms of speculating about how we will participate along the way. By the time we reach the end of this particular one of infinite journeys, we will know again. And we will be the self-knower. And it all begins with know thyself, even in this little emanative condition. At least know that self, and thou shalt know the world. But, you know, progressively so. Our own planetary logos has very small idea of what the universal vastness really is. But that will change. And on it changes until a great comprehensiveness of awareness begins to take over. Okay. So let's have our meditation, and let's see. You know, my style in doing this is, you know, it's partially a lecture and partially a meditation. But I hope to go slowly enough to give you a chance to settle in on the words so that they mean something experientially. So we begin just in quiet. And we begin, you know, to ponder together because the synthesizing effect of quietude begins to come over us. And we think for a moment, ponder on that old definition of God, which is not new with Pascal, but still he emphasized it, that God is an intelligible sphere. Whose center is everywhere, and whose circumference is nowhere. God as an intelligible sphere, whose center is everywhere, and whose circumference is nowhere. A strange thought, maybe, but we ponder. So, a center. There is a point which is the omnipresent center of the sphere. A sphere if it is bound only by self-perception of the universal logos. So, there is a point. That's everywhere. Now, normally we think of many points because it is really possible when you use the abstract mind to reduce all the many perceptions, all the many things, the many, each of them to a point. So you would have just, you know, trillions, quadrillions, sextillions, you know, quintillions of points. In any universe. And we tend to imagine points as if they have dimension and they're somehow next to each other, and you can tell one point from another point, but that is an illusion. The point has no dimension. Dimension as we normally think of it. Length, width, height, even later we'll discuss endurance in time. No point has any dimension. And if it has no dimension, it has no boundaries. So you can't have a bunch of points with boundaries. You cannot. As if they were spread out in space somehow, which is simply a category of consciousness, as Kant tells us. Space is a way that the brain has of observing apparent reality. It's not real. So you don't have many points. You only have one point. Which means all apparent points overlap. All points are one point. All points are one point, which is in a way everywhere, because space is an illusion. All points are one point, and that one point is forever the center of the universe. And the real realization, which we will ponder, is that you and I, we are that point. I'm not just one of many points. You are not just one of many points. You are, I am. God is the one and only point in universe. Which is ultimately non-dimensional, and which we can approximate by calling it the absolute infinitesimal, or the universal infinitesimal. Now, we are that point. And there's only one. And even it turns out to be an illusion when compared with absoluteness. We are the one point, which is the overlapping of all ultimately non-dimensional points, there being no boundary between them, thus the overlapping becomes necessary. We are it, that point. And there's, in universe, no escape from being that ultimately non-dimensional point. But for purposes of visualization, as the ancient masters new, we can find that point, any one of us can find it, let's just call it symbolically, in the middle of the heart. The one point which is all points, and the one point which is everywhere, and in a way nowhere, is found in the middle of the heart. It's the seed of ubiquitous reality. Remember, ubiquitous everywhereness. That one point in the heart, which is the same for you and me and all, is the seed of ubiquitous reality. or we might call it the seed of utter sameness in universe. Now let's imagine that, you know, as simply a normal person, the many are demonstrating to your perception. You register, you see the many. It's a condition of illusion. You can imagine, you know, our planet and its many forms of life on outer and inner levels, and our solar system, and, you know, all of what we call space, filled with the many, yes, absolutely, to our illusory perception. Filled with many things. And let's imagine that from that everywhere point, which is only one, though it seems to be in many hearts, a kind of extension goes forth from the seed. The seed of ubiquity blossoms as pervasion, which is presence everywhere. This seed of spirit goes forth in our imagination, and nothing stops it. No boundary stops the pervasion. Because, of course, boundaries are not real. So something is radiating forth in our imagination, all part of illusion, which passes through everything. Everything. It's never stopped by a boundary. There are no boundaries. And boundaries would usually have some kind of dimensionality, no matter how thin they might be. But we live in a ultimately non-dimensional universe. and the dimensionality of a boundary is not allowed. So this seed of spirit is just extending itself in pervasion through and through and through and through and through all, everything. And the many that we normally see is in imagination pervaded by this extension of the point, which is the one and only point, the same in you and me and all. Everything is pervaded. Everything is pervaded. Let's see if we can feel that a little bit. Wherever you go in this illusory extended world of time and space, you cannot get rid of the pervasion. Of this point within the heart, which is the same point in all hearts. And realize somehow, if we can, that all these many that in illusion we perceive, all these many born of limited perception, and this is an important aspect now, all these many arise out of one and the same pervasion, which begins in the heart. They wouldn't be the many we think we perceive, would not even be if the pervasion did not exist. The root of the many is that which pervades. It's not just an item of consciousness that pervades. It is the cause of the apparent many. Everything arises out of this pervasion. But now we're going to take it one step farther. that that provision is you. The essential, unchanging, never other you, me, it, but it is correct then to say I am the provision, the extended point within the heart. We collapse the universe to a point, but that point really is everywhere, underlying all things, the cause of all things, and is you, I. All arises out of you. And we can say, all arises out of me. Capital M, capital E, the great mantra, naught is but me, begins to come into focus. The Tibetan gives it to us in the second ray method. Naught is but me. I am that point. I am that provision. All arises out of me. Naught is but me. Every little item in the perceived many arises out of you. We try to approach even the slightest impression that this may be so. You are the cause, the unchanging cause, the cause than which there is no other. Essentially, this is so. And thus, without you, no many. There's nothing personal here. There's nothing even individual here. There's nothing bounded here. This you, this I, they are real and not figments of our limited perception. And you can begin to get the feel of it, you know. Something which is real, which is you, is going forth from the seed of spirit in the heart, so that you realize yourself to be the one substanding one. The indispensable one, the one than which there is no other. And if you can get below partiality, confinement, boundaried thinking, you can find this self. You can feel your own substandingness of all. Of all you can see or imagine. Of all you can register or maybe not register. But you are the substandingness . You are responsible. A very different you. A very different I. And this feeling, let's call it a feeling, it's not a final word, of being everywhere and of being everything at root is a fundamental pantheism. And not only, you know, can you relate to everything in the relative world, but you become that which you think you are relating to. It is operating in a stratum which is like infinitely within. On terms of the utmost spiritual intimacy, beingness is the utmost spiritual intimacy. and all the many are included in your beingness. And it's very different from being a personality who is striving and a disciple who is struggling and an initiate who is working. It's very different. And all those other things, of course, are true too, in the world of the Mahamaya. So, practice makes perfect. In the realization of the ancient Vedantic saying, thou art that. And in this realization, the great heresy of separateness is overcome at a radical level. And a door hitherto shut fast is opened. So practice a little bit, maybe each day, living the life of the pervading one, the omnipresent point, the one and only point of spirit, which is the center of all illusion, but it's the real center. Practice a little living that. You'll have many other things to do and many struggles as a normal aspirant or disciple, but also take a little relief from relativity. And find that something other than which there is none other. And be it. I just wanted to check out the note, you know. is a Neptune note. I guess there's a lot of Neptune in this kind of meditation. So, okay. All right, friends. So that's where we went today. And you'll just have to, just like everybody else, find your own way as a relative being into non-relativity, as I'm trying to do, and as many try to do. But the seeker and the sought are one, and naught is but me. And I do still persist. What I'm doing is sounding out the closing mantras from DK's seven stanzas regarding, I guess I could simply call it identification. It's found in several places in the books. But we have to make all of these words into reality within our consciousness. And that's where the work occurs in this great veil of Maya in which we are immersed. Is there anyone that wants to share a thought or a question or anything of that nature? You're most welcome to do so tonight. I think we have reappearance of the Christ meditation. In the relative world, of course, that's of the utmost importance. DK said nothing more important than that. And also with it, the founding of the new group of world servers. So we'll be doing that at...
Michael, it is a sacred pentagram full moon approach.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. That's what it is. Sacred pentagram. Well, okay. Okay. Yeah, we're getting near now, aren't we? So now our sort of full moon schedule is taking over. And thank you, Roz, and everybody that is attending. And Tia remarks on relief from relativity. Well, it came to me this morning. What do we need relief from? I'm remembering reading in the Mahatma letters. Now, of course, DK said a lot of those letters were somehow written by Madame Blavatsky. She apparently, the story goes, she precipitated them. And when something came through from Master KH, it was precipitated in blue. And when something came through from Master Moria, it was precipitated in red. But the idea was, Kutumi suggested, that meditation was their holiday. So, speaking of relief, the holiday, you know, relaxing one's point of tension in order to recharge. It was the high meditation which gave them relief. And ultimately, as the dragon blinks his eye, you know, an old symbol, moments of relief come instantaneously, almost like a, oh my, you know, an aha, a gasp. And later, as I've said, the dragon learns to keep his eye open more and more. So at any point, relativity and non-relativity are simultaneously occurring and are realized as such. And by the way, regarding tonight, then do check out the timing, because I think, Tuya, that it's at 7 o'clock, isn't it? The sacred pentagram, and not at 6 o'clock. Is it not?
Yes,
so?
Seven. Right.
Okay. 7 o'clock. GMT, apparently. And then watch the timing for the upcoming days in the schedule that Tuya and Ann have made, because the pre-full moon begins at 8:15 and not at 8. You know, there are slight modifications, so just be aware. And Martine, I think a very, it's a powerful thought. Be the love you are. Well, you know, and we, a few times ago, in some one class or another, we went into that state of, I am the light of the world. I am the love of the world. And we carried it further along the identificatory scale. So just, you know, realize that when you say, okay, I am love, you're not looking at any form in the conventional sense with which you identify. See, mostly our identification, what we think we are, is form-bound. But when you say something like, you know, be the love you are, I am love, I am the love of the world, well, like, where's the form? It's an energy, isn't it? It's some kind of state, some kind of energy state, arranging all perceptions accordingly, acting upon the forms we perceive. And that too is going to be emanating from the heart. In a way, everything emanates from the heart. The heart is inclusive, just the way the seed of the spirit contains everything. So one of the things we can begin to do, putting it in a simple way, is identify with the non-formal. Identify with the non-formal. Most of our life is so spent. Just look at the television. It's just like totally body consciousness. It's really the ultimate in form-boundedness, you know. But what happens when you start identifying non-formally? What you become, or what you realize yourself to be, to detach one's self-image from form, is a great exercise. Because we're born into it, you know. And we just carry it with us for our whole life. And when we say, what's going to happen to me? We so often mean, what's going to happen to my body? So we learn detachment from that form of limited perception. And okay, so here's Leslie from Torquem Ceredarian. The heart is the organ that brings equilibrium. Yeah, and you know, that's in a way such so rooted in Agni Yoga, and of course, Torquem, he was really into Agni Yoga. You know, he was deep into it, and there is this balance point. And now we're, you know, we're talking somewhat metaphorically. We're not just talking about a flesh and blood organ. It's a kind of a chakric state of consciousness associated with a certain vortex between the shoulder blades. And this whole idea of the winged heart and its relationship to equilibrium in consciousness as related to the heart is extremely important. So, you know, in the arcane school in the old days, I think I told you that Alice Bailey and Helena Rorick, they were friends maybe for a while, you know, and Alice Bailey being the absorptive second-rate type, absorbed some of the Agni Yoga. And she offered two courses, I think 6 months each. And when I was going through the Arcane School, you know, I was part of that. And it was a course on the doctrine of the I, which is ever mobile, and there are two of them, unless, of course, it becomes one of them, and the doctrine of the heart. That was the second course, and it was considered to be even deeper, the doctrine of the heart. So when we talk about heart, it's basically a deep type of unitive perception, which is systemically related to the vortex found between the shoulder blades and on other planes as well, higher vortices, all beginning from the logoic plane. There are 49 vortices of force, and all the archetypal vortices begin on our highest plane. Now, who knows what goes beyond that on the cosmic astral and what those things might be, but probably my guess would be that whatever vortex shows up down here as the heart begins symbolically at the very top of the universe. Every vortex begins, has its beginning at the highest plane or state that can be found in a universe. So yes, of course, it is a spiritual organ and not the flesh and blood organ that we, you know, commonly think of as the heart. You know, work with your heart. I've always been a thinking type, a lot of third ray, you know, and sometimes work with the heart has evaded me. But in recent years, I've had these realizations as I try, as DK suggests, to climb the mountain of vision by oneself, you know, not just depending on everybody else to tell me what is real. And I discovered along the way, you know, the even for a thinking type such as I am, that the centrality of the heart is far greater and really holds the key to that kind of awareness, which is monadic in nature. You know, however far we may be from the whole thing, the real thing, the complete awareness, the heart and the monad, they do fit together. And that's why we're told that life finds its seat within the heart. Not just, you know, the vitality to keep you going, that's also true, but no, real life. And what is life? And DK basically says, well, you're not going to define that. You don't know what that is. But life and being, for me, are equivalent. So if you want to discover this pure being and identify as this pure being, the heart as a spiritual organism is required. And then, you know, equilibrium will come into the life, and a balanced life in the Maya will occur, because we have found the immovable point. Okay, is there anything else? If not, we'll proceed to the great invocation. But if there is anything else, then we can respond, attempt to anyway. So the Great Invocation, stanza number 3. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. from the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, and thank you for being here and practice some of these things. Take them as some of your spiritual exercises. We have spiritual exercises for the world of relativity. And we are developing spiritual exercises for the non-dual world, the world beyond relativity. So let's see what we can do with that as illusory time passes and as we build towards becoming in full awareness the reality which we are. So lots of love and many blessings from Tuya and me and from the whole Moria Federation communications group. And don't forget the conference. It's coming up in a couple of months. It'll be a remote conference, and it'll be, you know, full as usual. So do try to find ways to join us there. And meanwhile, we'll continue to offer what we can to help the ageless wisdom become a reality for us increasingly. So we'll be working together. Oh, relativity, we love you, says Tia. Yes, that's the way. Okay. See you soon.